You solemnly swear the evidence you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Welcome to Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I.
Come on, Johnny, you might as well talk. Who robbed that payroll truck?
I've read the case files, have you?
Well, it sure gives an airtight alibi.
Crime Time is heard exclusively on Biz Talk Radio. Check out podcasts of our shows or listen live at biztalkradio.com. And now, your host of Crime Time, Vito Colucci, P.I.
Good evening, everybody. If it's Sunday night, it's time for Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I. Big welcome out to everybody. Nice shout out to all of our fans that listen all the time and to any new people. Welcome to the show. I believe you will enjoy it. We feature all different types of crime topics. And always nice to get the emails like I do and different people posting what they like about the show. So I'm very appreciative of that. We got a real interesting show tonight. Wow, this is a good one. Friend of mine, he's been on before, and we had a lot of comments about him. All good, very informative show. His name is Bob Hood from the Colorado area. And let me just read a little bit about his background here. Bob Hood is a nationally recognized correctional professional with over 37 years in local, state, and federal criminal justice experience. He retired from the Federal Bureau of Prisons, that's BOP, as the warden of the nation's most secure institution, the United States Administrative Supermax Penitentiary in Colorado. He was responsible for the most violent, disruptive, and escape-prone inmates in federal custody. Top-secret clearance was required for this position. And Bob has just come back from what was called the North American Association of Wardens and Superintendents Conference, which was just a week ago. And I want to welcome again to the show, Bob Hood. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Vito. I appreciate you letting me speak to your the folks out there.
Yeah, it's always you're always a very busy man. I love to see you. It's like, you know that little thing that the kids play. It's called Where's Waldo? Well, we changed around now. Where's Bob Hood? And the kids point to different sections on the map and the whole bit. But, you know, congratulations. How was that conference, first of all? Exciting?
That was outstanding. There's a large group of wardens and superintendents get together every year. They normally get together at the American Corrections Association. They've been meeting for around 144 years, I believe it or not. And this is a smaller group, but it's a homogeneous group of federal, state, local, military wardens, and private prison administrators. So pretty neat group of people.
And how many days did that go for?
It's a five-day conference.
And everybody brings their problems, let's say, and people help each other and just try to make it a better situation for all of the wardens and the people?
Yeah, there's some trends that are going on throughout the country and throughout the world, actually. And so when you have directors of corrections, wardens of major facilities around the country, yeah, they get together. Some it's mandatory. You know, you just need to address certain topics by law. But most of it, it's dealing with, what are you doing about drones coming into your prison? What are you doing about segregation or restrictive housing, we call it? Contraband, staff misconduct, things like that. So we take the topics, we do roundtables, we do a lot of plenary sessions, and we try to come away with solutions.
Yeah, I'm looking at the different topics. Wow, over the 5 days, you guys had a lot of great things to go to. I mean, I see on there the worldwide use of drones. One thing that piques my interest, the Charles Colson Task Force on Federal Corrections. I've watched his life change for the better over the years since being involved with President Nixon on the whole Watergate thing and going to jail. Why did his name go on this? I know he's involved a lot. I know he visits the prisons constantly, and he has his own association, right?
Sure, he does. Yeah, there's been a lot of interest from Senator Durbin, who's created some interest in what we're doing in the federal prison system. Just last Monday, a week ago today, we had the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy make a comment about the pathetic conditions within our prison system. So, you know, when he talks about it just not working, and there must be some alternatives, you get those people of that level, plus we have some major lawsuits going on against the system. So what happened is they created the Charles Colson Task Force on Federal Corrections. This is specific to federal. And it's a nine-person bipartisan group of people. I believe there's a judge on there. There's various academic folks. Jim Liske, he's the CEO, president of Prison Fellowship. So that, you know, this nine-person group, they're going to come up with findings and recommendations and provide it to Congress and the Department of Justice and to the president. So this is a high level.
Wow. Very interesting. Something good there. Now, let me ask you about this next one here, because I've had a lot of people talk about this, and you see it on television all the time. You attended, I guess, the Prison Rape Elimination Act. Sexual abuse in prison remains a serious safety and security issue. Now, here's my point. You got all different kinds of jails, prisons, from a minimum security, maximum, the whole bit. When you watch shows or you watch the news or whatever it may be, it's kind of understood that at least people seem to think anytime a guy's going to go to jail for 3 to 5 years or something of that nature, he's going to get raped. Would this be something that would fall back on, the security people there or what? I mean, can more safety measures be done there to at least somebody that's, going to get out in 5 years be safe?
Yeah, the PREA, or the Prison Rape Elimination Act, really what it does is it notifies the inmates as soon as they walk in the door. They get written and verbal instructions. They're asked to notify if they have any concerns coming in. They articulate that. But they also are giving some counseling on that. And I guess what's happening is there's more of an awareness. You know, at that particular act, the Department of Justice indicated around 4% of state and federal prison inmates, they report experiencing one or more incidents of sexual victimization by another inmate or a facility staff member within a 12-month period. So, again, I've been doing this all my life. I did this right out of college, started getting into prison work. I can only think of a few examples at my institutions, whether I was a line staff or the warden of the institution, where you actually had a consensual that I was aware of or something more serious like a rape. So it's I'm not trying to put down the issue. It's very important. Yeah. But I think you find it more in the, TV glorifies a lot of this stuff. You know, that's what makes TV.
Right.
But to be honest with you, it occurs less in terms of actual brutal rapes. But there are, the insinuations, the comments, no different than the Air Force Academy or the other military bases or any time you have a group of people together.
Right. Let me ask you this, though. This seems to make sense to me. You tell me if I'm right. You were the warden at the Supermax Penitentiary, where I would believe there's not too much prisoner contact with each other just because of what they're in for. Am I correct?
Correct. Any warden that would say I don't have sexual misconduct in their prison would be falsifying it.
Right.
There's always consensual and non-consensual potential for sex in any prison. I would say that the Supermax would be the rare example, only because pretty much 23 hours a day they're separated in cells. There's not a time for them to get together. And when you think of the hundreds of cameras, the large quantity of staff that are supervising, and it's just built to separate the inmates. So zero concern about any physical contact. I'm not even talking about rape. I'm just talking about physical contact of any type.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've been to, I spoke myself at the First World Private Investigator Conference out in Las mm-hmm. Vegas, and I attended one of the classes, too, that was for how to take a statement, blah, blah, blah. Now, people would say to me, Vito, you take a great statement. You did that famous one for the Michael Skako case, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
But see, I'm the type, and in a couple of seconds we have left on this this segment here, I wanted to go and learn even more. You know, it didn't matter
sure.
what people thought or how I felt I gave a good one. I wanted to come away with some other nuggets that maybe I could utilize or things
sure.
like that.
And that's why we go to these conferences. Yeah, that's why
yeah,
we go to these conferences.
Say,
sure.
Very very quickly, Bob, in the last minute here, did you feel that same way? Did you come back on the plane or whatever and say, wow, I'm really glad I went to some of these?
I do. It's a homecoming, first of all. We're meeting wardens from all over the country, and that's the first thing. But the more important thing is we're hitting current topics, not just historic. And then we always visit the local facilities. So we tour the United States Penitentiary in Leavenworth. The warden personally showed me around, and, you know, that's neat. It's neat if you're in this business to go and realize how other people are handling their business and be among your peers.
All right. Well, we're going to be heading to a break. Security Magazine identifies Mr. Hood as one of the top 25 most influential people in the security industry. We'll be right back with Robert Hood. Song by The Police. Good group that singing this song, appropriate song called I'll Be Watching You. And a lot of that goes on at the Max, Colorado, where I guess Bob Hood was the warden there for quite a while. Hey, Bob, you mentioned a little bit to me about going through Leavenworth on your most recent trip. Tell the listeners a little bit about that place.
Yeah, just what you think. Leavenworth is one of the icons for the country. It was constructed back in 1897. The construction started then, and there's around 2,000 inmates inside this huge walled facility. When you drive up to it, I've been there several times, but when you drive up to it, I don't care how many times you would go, it looks like the United States Congress. It's actually built after the same building, the Capitol. And so when you look at the Capitol building in Washington, you know, if you've been to the mall and you look back down at the long mall at the building, it looks like Leavenworth, and therefore Leavenworth looks like our Capitol.
Question to you now, you say this is built in 1897, whereas the Supermax is a lot newer, obviously, than that. So in other words, Leavenworth would be a prisoner basically probably wouldn't like it in there for the reasons of the oldness of it. Am I correct?
They wouldn't like it there, but what they would like at Leavenworth is all 2,000 inmates are pretty much walking around each day. They're going to school, church, and work, and et cetera. So the fact that there's a big yard, the fact that they're out of their cell most of the time, they simply go in for their evening to sleep. So it's a big difference versus the Supermax, where, you know, the best day you're going to have is to go out and not even see the mountains, hardly see any terrain at all, because you're locked down 23 hours a day for the rest of your life for the most of those inmates.
Now, at Leavenworth, you have guys there serving life?
You do, but something the public might be surprised to know, Leavenworth changed their mission, no different than Alcatraz changed their mission years ago when it could no longer hold high-security inmates. You know, it's an old building. So recently, although they didn't tell the public this, recently they changed it to a federal correctional institution. It's kind of a medium security prison, but they have the history, this beautiful big building with gun towers and a huge wall, and, you know, it's scary from the outside and from the inside. What I was particularly interested in seeing, though, the warden, really a great man, Claude May, he showed me around Thomas Silverstein's cell. And let me tell your listeners very quickly about this. This guy was sometimes called America's most isolated man. He started out back in the 70s being his typical armed robber. Nothing too exciting, average guy. And then as he got into prison life, you know, he was a young guy, he ended up killing two inmates, one for refusing to be kind of a drug mule for the Aryan Brotherhood, one of the inmate gangs, and killing a D.C. black gang member at a separate time. So he killed two inmates while in prison, not on the street, while in prison. And then he goes to Marion, what was the supermax before the ADX in Colorado. So Marion, Illinois has a penitentiary there. So when it was the supermax, he was sent there, and he ends up killing an officer, a guy by the name of, a correctional officer by the name of Merrill Klutz. And so here a guy kills an officer, kills two inmates, and was involved with the riots down, if you remember, back in 1987, back in Atlanta, Georgia. The place was burning like crazy. He was involved in that. So here's a guy who has spent most of his time in a special cell in the bowels of Leavenworth. No contact with other inmates. The only time, to my knowledge, that kind of area was used was when Noriega was housed there during his incarceration with the Bureau. And now Silverstein is at the Supermax in Colorado.
Wow. Now, how about Noriega? He was there, you said, for a while?
Yeah, he was there just, again, they just because of the conditions of confinement. They wanted to keep him, I believe, before or after he went down to Florida. You know, he was at the Florida facility for a while. But I think if you look at this kind of cell, whether it's Tom B. Silverstein or Noriega, I think the difference is Silverstein has been not only separated from inmates his entire career, almost 30 years, and what the public would normally call solitary. We don't use the word solitary confinement much more anywhere more, but it's very similar to that. But he has not been around. He has a cell. It is a shower. He has a little rec area, which means you walk like 5 feet from his cell, and there's like a place where you can put a stationary bike or some kind of exercise. So his whole world truly is in just a couple feet of each other, this cell recreation area. And then we were sent to the Supermax. That's not an upgrade. Supermax was built in 1994, not like Leavenworth, 1897.
Right.
But the difference is, he is still now only able to get out 1 hour a day, and he still has a very stark environment. It's just cleaner, maybe, or nicer, and more modern, but it, trust me, it's still a pretty rough place.
And nobody to even talk to. Right?
That's correct.
Do chaplains go and see him? Do anybody sit and talk with him? Or,
oh, definitely,
or
definitely. Actually, there's quite, as far as other inmates, no. It's simply he's isolated. As far as other people, yeah, the warden would go there on a daily basis, the chaplains, psychologists, teachers, medical people. So he'll have an abundance of people going by. And if your listeners ever have an interest, look up that name, Tommy Silverstein, on a website, and it's impressive in one sense because he has not been a problem management-wise, minus those isolated events, but they're serious isolated events of killing two inmates and killing a staff member.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit now, because I know our listeners are interested in this. The correctional officers, these guys and gals, put their life on the line every day, okay? When their spouse or kids say goodbye to them each day for work, you know, it's just like, again, being a cop, like I was, or whatever. They don't know if these guys are going to, you know, somebody would think, prison, you know, you just go check on the people, blah, blah, blah. What's a typical paycheck, Bob, for these people for putting their life on the line?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of scary, and it depends on the local jail versus a state facility, a private prison, or the feds. But generally speaking, let's take on the low end. If you go to Mississippi today, there's people in Parchman, Mississippi, dealing with lifers, dealing with people on death row, and they're making $12.71 an hour. An hour. And the mean wage in that, once you finish your probationary year, it bounces up quite a bit. But you have people walking in making $19,000-$20,000 a year. But the mean wage after you finish your year of probation, it sounds good maybe to some people, younger listeners, but it's around $26,000 a year, which comes out to be less than $13 an hour. You know, and that's Mississippi. Now, if you jump over to where you are in Nevada, again, the mean wage for correctional staff is around $55,000. That's the mean wage. But that still is $26 an hour. So, you know,
right.
Whether it be Georgia, whether it be Nevada, or if you get to the high-profile places like, California or whatever, a lot of these guys are end up working an extra 20 hours a week or more just to make that overtime to make ends meet.
All right,
if you're sitting in New York City...
Hold that thought. We're going to a hard break. We're going to be right back with Bob Hood.
Sure.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. All day long they're saying.
If you're the realest bad of bad boys, you may go to a place called the Supermax Penitentiary in Colorado. Now, you see, your prerequisite to get in there is you got to be a very bad boy. And we're talking to the former warden there, Bob Hood. Not just a warden, but he speaks. He's been on TV on CBS, which aired a 60-minute special on his ability to effectively manage the most secured prison in America. He's a subject matter expert specializing in effective leadership. And Bob, we've been talking about the salaries for the correction officers, which now hearing a lot of the low figures there and now looking at examples of staff misconduct in the federal prisons. I mean, just already, 2015, former correctional officer and a Michigan woman sentenced in bribery scheme. Then you got, just in February, a former correctional guard sentenced for conspiracy to smuggle heroin, methamphetamine, and other. I mean, it goes on. And I even got a chaplain here, former federal prison chaplain, pleads guilty to passing messages for convicted killer Frank Calabrese. So let me ask you, first of all, chaplains, is that a paying position in prisons or not?
You say paying, P-A-I-N?
I mean, paying. Do they get paid? I can see what you mean. Do they get paid for their work, which they do?
They
great
do.
Work.
Yeah, they do. They're government service workers. They're normally GS-11s and 12s, so they're making pretty good money. But unfortunately now, because of the expansion of the federal prison system, well over 200,000 inmates, now each institution has a full-time chapel, sometimes two, but they really depend on volunteers and contracted people. It's kind of hard to get an imam. It's kind of hard to get a Wiccan. It's kind of hard to get a rabbi, whatever. So you find yourself having a chaplain, a multi-faith chaplain, and then you contract or get volunteers for the rest.
Interesting. How do you, I'm sure you, I mentioned to you before about these things going on, and you say that's pretty, you know, every conference you're going to go to, you're going to have talk each time about what to do about this misconduct, right?
Sure. I mean, in every facility, you have issues. Now it's a matter of looking at the trends and trying to solve it. You know, the example you gave a minute ago, talking about someone bringing in items. You know, when you have a 28-year-old, and that's what this one staff member was, a federal correctional officer at the Taft Federal Correctional Facility, a 28-year-old, and since it's public record, I'll tell you, his name is Raymond Kano. Now, here a young guy. He's in an expensive state to live in, California. Well, he ends up smuggling in cell phones, cash, alcohol, controlled substances into the prison for cash. So there's no way to condone that. The guy's down and out. Maybe he's not paid enough. Well, then don't come into this prison work. That's what it is. He just got 30 months, which is not a lot of time, actually, but he's 30 months in a federal prison, which is not good for a former correctional officer. So these things do occur.
Sure.
And I don't want to give your listeners the impression that that's across the board, but with 38,000 federal correctional officers in the country, again, just federal. Yeah, when I was chief of internal affairs before I became warden, I would look at those trends and see who is bringing in drugs, who is getting too close to the inmate. And it's a tricky deal, because if you're in downtown New York City and you're making a small amount of money being a correctional officer and you're new, there's a lot of temptation. You have high-profile people come through the jail. They're going to try to get to you. They're going to figure out who your family is, how much you're making, and just go on the Internet and try to figure out your base pay, et cetera. So it's a very tricky world that we're in, because we're having young people going into a place where there's a lot of sophisticated criminals, and we don't want the Stockholm Syndrome to occur where they get closer and closer and closer to the inmate, and the inmate finds the weakest staff member. And before you know, it might be something, Vito, as, hey, would you mind, come give me a cigarette. I clean your floors. I'm your inmate orderly. Come on, give me a friggin' cigarette. So they get the cigarette, and then that becomes something bigger and bigger and bigger. And before you know, they're carrying cell phones in and controlled substances into the prison.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's you always read about in the newspapers, whereas a big drug dealer, big organized crime guy in jail, maybe they've been in already 5 to 7 years, still staying in jail, but hearing that they haven't missed a beat with their drug business or their organized crime business where they've kept up with it every day. The only way you're going to do that is by having a phone. Okay, and not the phone you stand in line to use for a couple of minutes, but a phone that somebody brings to you, you see? And am I correct with that?
Correct, and that's that was the one of the top three or four themes that we dealt with at the national conference. You know, we end up having a system like Mississippi, the one we used earlier to say that they're not making a lot of money, but yet they're having you know, thousands and thousands of cell phones being snuck into the prisons. They're having the SIMS card. Look how small a SIM card is for, you know, memory card is for a phone. They have little cameras. They're having, you name it, they're having it coming into the system. And so, obviously, not to say that's all coming in from staff. Some of it's thrown over the fence. We've had examples where someone back down in North Carolina, down that part of the country, used a potato gun. You know, they got on the internet, they learned how to make a potato gun, which I made when I was a kid, how to launch potatoes, you know, half a mile away. That's kind of fun when you're a kid. Now people are taking those potato guns and they're shooting cell phones into the prison yard, or they're shooting drugs in, or something like that. So it's gone from old school of, you know, stick it up your rear or down your throat and pass it. Now we're shooting them in. We're taking drones and we're flying them in. Actual examples of bringing in marijuana or hash or, you know, whatever into the prison yard with drones. So this is getting more high tech.
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Tell me about this one here. I'm trying to figure it out myself. It happens February 9, 2015. Correctional officer sentenced on bribery charges. Now, that's not, ladies and gentlemen, that's not somebody coming into the jail and giving the prisoner money. This is doing, has to be done on the outside. Let's say the bad guy's a big organized crime guy, and you as a correctional officer are bringing him in whatever he wants. And the organized crime people meet with your brother or meet with your wife or whoever, and they're supplying the money to her. Am I correct on that? I mean,
that's
it's not going to come into the prison. They're not going to bring $10,000 into the prison. So it has to be done with meeting somebody on the outside.
Yeah, a lot of times, if it's the case I believe you're referring to, you know, you get someone that gets closer to the inmate. Before you know, they're bringing in something, you know, whether it be cigarettes or drugs or whatever, and they're saying, okay, now we need to pay you. So they're meeting a third party. They're meeting normally a family member or a gang member outside. And when that's occurring, the smart inmates are videotaping that, or their family members are recording that, because they want more. And I guarantee you the number one way that staff members are found are not through self-admission. They're not saying, oh, by the way, I want to go to prison. I want to give up. I want to testify against myself. What's going to happen, the inmate will get in trouble. They'll have a fight. They'll hit an officer, and then they'll plea. They'll simply say, look, before you take me away in handcuffs, I can give up one of your staff who's bringing in drugs or whatever. So, yeah, the deals are often done outside. And I hate to say it, but many of our prisons are located in not the best areas. And so what happens is a lot of family members move across the country. They know their spouse is sitting in the local federal, state, or local jail or prison.
Right.
And so they're moving into these neighborhoods, and it doesn't take long before, you know, they assimilate, and next thing you know, they're asking staff to do them a favor, sneak something in. And with the technology nowadays, it's so easy to pass things on. And not every place is like the Supermax, where you're in handcuffs and a Martin chain around your stomach, leg irons, even while you're sitting behind a bulletproof glass talking to your loved one. Most prisons, you're allowed to hug your loved one, give them a kiss, one kiss, and sit down. And obviously, there's a lot of passing of contraband in that process.
Wow. Okay. Now, as you go to these conferences, Bob, are they getting better each time? What I mean by that is more learning going on from say years ago when you first got involved, or more Intuit ways to handle things. I'm reading thing here. It says restricted housing program address long-term confinement and segregation with emphasis on mental illness conditions. Now, it's not segregation as we think of. It's segregation as far as the conditions of confinement and all that stuff. I think we're going to a hard break, but why don't you start on that a little bit? I'll cut you off when we're going to the break.
Sure. Yeah, and we do learn more each and every year. You know, the fact that there's 80,000 people in restrictive housing in this country, that's what the public would think of as segregation. That means they're in a cell, they have limited personal belongings that the average inmate would have, limited visits. Basically, it's in the old days, we'd say you're throwing you into the hole. Well, 80,000 people, some of those are coming out. Some of those will be your neighbors, whether you like it or not. So we're trying to learn from litigation, from inmate testimony, and just experience from wardens of how can we do it better.
All right, Bob, hold that thought. We're going to a hard break. Be right back with Bob Hood. Stand by. But I believe one of the best police shows that I've ever seen, being the next cop, Hill Street Blues. And while I'm plugging shows, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see another show that's on right now that I consider one of the best, Thursday nights, Chicago PD, fantastic show. Take it from an ex-cop who worked undercover narcotics and organized crime. You'll enjoy the show if you like true cop dramas. All right, we are back with Bob Hood. That's my little plug, Bob, for the day, you know. But so let me see. We were going to talk. Oh, I was going to ask you something. Now, you're retired. I was quite surprised to hear your answer about the regulations. Tell our listeners, when do you have to retire? This wasn't your choice.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, you know, it seemed like you really like this kind of work, Bob. You've written things, you've been on TV, you've been on radio, and et cetera, et cetera. So, like, why'd you retire? Why'd you give it up? Well, to be candid with you, it's called the law. They passed a law several years back, and you must retire as a federal law enforcement, not just wardens, but anyone in the prison or other federal law enforcement positions must retire at the age of 57. They want you in young, they want you out young. We're fairly young.
I know, but wow, I'm surprised that law stays, though, because and you even mentioned before when we were on a break, your secretary, too? You mentioned
yeah, everyone in the prison, because we're all custody first. So my secretary, around this time of the year, she's going to have to qualify with a 9mm, with a shotgun, AR-15. She's going to have to know how to use tear gas, and then all the communication skills and psychological courses and treatment stuff. So the bottom line is, whether you're the secretary, the captain over the security, or the warden, all 38,000 BOP employees must retire at 57, because they want you to qualify every year. And to be candid with it, I've been a warden four times, and all the places where I've worked, I try to keep, even though I was getting older, I would rappel with the staff. I'd rappel. I ran total eight marathons in my life. So, when you're looking at a young 22-year-old coming into the prison system and they're looking at me, I'm saying, fine, let's go run a marathon, or let's go rappel, or let's go shoot that 9mm. Everyone, it's a very wellness-oriented kind of business.
Let me ask you this, then. If somebody, let's say, becomes a warden, would they make a warden at age 50, knowing that he could only stay a warden 7 years? Like, I'm talking about pension plans and retirement. How does that all work?
Yeah, they do, but it seems like it's getting younger and younger. Just because of the turnover with the federal government, turnover in our kind of business, we're finding that wardens are now coming in at an earlier age. So, yes, you could do it at 50. Most of the time, if you're going to work at the Supermax or a high-level penitentiary like Leavenworth, you really are expected to work at least two, maybe even three prisons as a warden before you go to the Harvard of the system. So, again, if you're at a camp, you might find it being a younger younger warden who's, you know, just learning how to be a warden. If you go into the penitentiaries, you're getting older. You're having more experience. You're getting older.
Well, you know, I can understand it after you explain it now, because there's also the issue, and, you know, this isn't just for Hollywood movies or TV. There are prison escapes or prisoners getting out, and I would think, unfortunately, one of the people they would want to hold hostage would be somebody higher up. Be it a captain or be it a warden. So, I mean, there's never, I don't think, if that's my position, Bob, I don't think I'd ever have downtime. I'd always be very conscious of what was going on each day, right?
Sure, but we make it very clear to the inmates in the federal system and most of the state systems around the country that we don't have our hostage policy is very clear. It doesn't make a difference whether they take me or my secretary. We're not going to negotiate. I know that I would not work in a prison if we were going to negotiate any degree where we'd have a release of an inmate, because then you just have a copycat situation going around the country. So, hey, if an inmate wants to take me, to be candid with you, my young staff have said, Warden, what kind of insurance do you have? Allstate or, you know, what? And I say, well, to be candid with you, it's what you do 365 days of the year. So when leap year comes, that extra day, when you do have a problem on the ER, when an inmate is going to act up and maybe come toward you, it's setting the culture, setting the tone, the professionalism. So I don't want to give an inmate a reason to mess with me. But I do know there are some that doesn't make a difference. You know, they might not be wired the same way and have logic like that.
Let me ask you, Bob. I ask all our guests this near the end of the show each time. I probably asked you last time you were on. But what is still out there for Bob Hood 5, 7, 10 years from now? I mean, you've done a lot. You've done the TV shows like I have. You've worked a great, great career. You've gone to really the limit of to the highness of where a warden can go with the Supermax prison. What is still out there that you haven't done yet, maybe? Or maybe you'd say to me, Vito, I like exactly what I'm doing.
Well, there's two things. One is by going to these conferences. At the recent conference we discussed, I had 150 wardens in front of me, and I was doing it's called a warden exchange program, and me and a couple other wardens, people with prison fellowship, they were sponsoring this. What we were doing is we're getting wardens that have been around, good people. They've been around 5, 10, 15 years as wardens, but we're coming out and saying, guess what? Here's Bob Hood's of the world. I have no agenda. I'm retired. I can say what I want now. Before, I couldn't do that, and we're looking at doing some transformational issues on prison leadership. We're trying to say, these are different days, wardens. You know, we have more litigation, we have more issues with restrictive housing and medical conditions, mental illness in our prisons, because our prisons have become the new mental institutions of the country. So I'm excited about being involved with this warden exchange, where we're doing a 7-month weekly program. It's every week we get together doing webinars like we're doing right now with you. We're doing that with wardens around the country, trying to bring it to the next level. And then I always get asked, hey, when's the book coming out? And to be honest with you, all the real good stuff, I'm going to have to wait till the world cleans up a little bit, because there's some really great stuff that the public should be aware of when the time is right. And you realize that our staff at the Supermax have really helped the world out so much, but it's not the time to talk about it, because things are still in play with the craziness of the world.
Well, Bob, we only have a couple seconds. I want to thank you again, my friend Bob Hood from the Colorado area. You know, look him up. Look him up. See what his background is. We've touched a lot of it with the shows he's been on here. But, you know, check it out. You've learned a lot today, folks. I've learned a lot, and I've been involved in police or private detective work since 1969, and I always love to have Bob on. So, Bob, until we speak again, and to our listeners that have enjoyed tonight's show, stay tuned. We'll be on every Sunday night until we meet again. Good night, and God bless. Thank you.
Thank you, Vito.
Thank you, Bob.